The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third row seating, available dual wireless charging pads. You've got the H-Track all-wheel drive so you can take on those dirt trails and kick up some mud. Or the third row seating gets your whole family in to experience the thrill together. The dual wireless charging pads make sure that no one gets stuck in the great outdoors with a dead cell phone. Think about those adventurous activities you can do, like me, taking a ski trip up with the family, maybe going on a camping expedition, anything and everything. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
Hey there, it's Gary Parrish. It's Wednesday, October 20th, 2021. Welcome back to the CBS Sports Eye on College Basketball podcast, where we sometimes discuss camel fighting, dodo birds, and leaky black. Matt Norlanda is here with me, and today we will be continuing our conference previews that we're publishing in alphabetical order. On Tuesday, we had like 29 minutes on the American Athletic Conference and 6 minutes on recovering the satellites. Today, we will turn our attention to the ACC and August and everything after. Dead leg, real quick, what's the best track on August and everything after?
Rain King.
Yeah! I think we agree. It's Rain King. Unless I'm sad, then it's raining in Baltimore.
Rain King is the best track on August and everything after, and A Murder of One is the most underrated track on August and everything after.
You ever get sad and just listen to Rain in Baltimore?
Not really. No. But you always got to have a little bit of melancholy to you, generally speaking, if you're going to spin some Counting Crows. We are now back-to-back episodes talking Counting Crows, which I am all in favor of.
I don't really get sad anymore and listen to Rain in Baltimore. But boy, there was a time way back a long time ago. I go through it every once in a while. Okay, let's get to the ACC. Okay. The storyline heading into the season is obviously and undeniably Mike Krzyzewski's final season at Duke. So let's start here. Does this bother you in any way? I see people tweet. This is why I ask. People tweet from time to time that they can't stand the Coach K farewell tour, and they're already sick of it. And I don't understand it. Like, what about the greatest coach in college basketball history coaching one final season? What about that is so bothersome to some people? Because I don't, it doesn't register with me.
I'd actually like to hear from listeners on this. So if you're someone that finds themselves in this particular group and you're not necessarily a born and bred Carolina fan where it's inside your DNA, I'd actually be interested to hear, because I know there are people that think this. We're on October 19th, October 20th, October 21st here, and we've got plenty of time to go here. It's creeping up the season, but like we're still, you know, we're technically less than 3 weeks away, but this idea that people are already sick of it, wait until we get to the first week of December, let alone once the NFL season's done.
Wait till we get to the Champions Classic.
Exactly. So, I mean, I think this just basically ties to, you know, obviously Duke is Duke, and Mike Krzyzewski and Duke have become the most polarizing program. I say become, they've been the most polarizing program in college basketball for a long time, and I think some people think that Mike Krzyzewski, going about it the way he did, which I don't necessarily object to, but I think people that will find any reason to hate Duke and Coach K, you know, him doing this and having a farewell tour, you know, and instead of doing it the way that Roy Williams did it, which I find interesting how one coach dropped it out of nowhere. Basically, almost nobody knew that was happening. And then Mike Krzyzewski takes the opposite approach there. It's just going to rub people the wrong way. And then when you consider that, I think a lot of people have for a long time thought that ESPN, given how many Duke basketball players have worked and work at that network, continue to, you know, showcase that program and highlight that program and give more love to that program than any other. I think all of those factors add in. But at this stage, you know, I don't think it has much basis, but Just wait until we get into the season. And because I do think I wrote this, I think, in my preseason 50 things to know 50 days before the start of the season. I do think that there's going to, I don't know if Duke will ever get more saturated than the Zion coverage, but I think that this season, if Duke is good, let me qualify this. If Duke is 1, 2, 3, 4 seed good, I don't know if the attention paid on Duke is ever going to be bigger than it is this season, with the only exception of when Zion Williamson was there.
Not only am I not bothered by the Coach K farewell tour, I love it. Like, I wish all legendary coaches would have these things. Like, I don't mind. Like, you can go out however you want to go out. I respect Roy for just, you know, I know he didn't just wake up one day and decide, but, like, that's what it felt like. Like, he just decided, all right, I'm done with this. Mm-hmm. And now he's, like, you know, I think I saw a picture of him recently. Grew a beard like Letterman. Not quite like Letterman, but, like, playing golf and just enjoying retirement, as he should. But I would have liked to have, you know, been aware heading into, like, hey, this is Roy's last game at the Smith Center. Hey, this is Roy's last game against Duke. Hey, this is Roy's maybe, you know, the last NCAA tournament appearance. Like, we didn't get to experience that in real time. And perhaps, you know, big picture, it's not that important. But I like the idea that we're going to go to New York in a few weeks, and we will both watch in person and experience Mike Krzyzewski's first game of his final season. And then there will be a last game in Cameron Indoor, which will be an amazing experience. And then, you know, who knows if they'll be good? I think they'll be good. But they certainly have the roster that suggests they can be really good. And we could go into the NCAA tournament with Mike Krzyzewski trying to walk it off, you know, having a realistic chance to win a national championship, cut nets, and call it a career. And the idea that we know all of this in advance, and then and we'll be able to properly appreciate, because I don't care whether you like him or hate the guy. He's like the greatest to have ever done it at the collegiate level. You know, I'm not going to tell other people how to feel, but I just don't understand what's not to enjoy about that.
I mean, it's just Duke, man. People are going to, and people, you know, I'm not saying the majority, but I'm not breaking news here. There's just always been a certain faction of college basketball's fan base that has loved and embraced hating Duke. And so by attachment to that, Mike Krzyzewski, you stick around long enough, you're good for that long, you're great for that long. It's just you're going to bring about enemies. And now I think social media also just piles onto this because we're just going to see it more, you know, whether you use Twitter or, you know, TikTok, which I am not on, or Instagram, however, you know, you're getting all that stuff. Reaction to it is more, you know, available to you and in your face than it ever has been before. But that'll be an interesting night, you know, a little less than 3 weeks from now, in that the college football playoff rankings will come out, as they always do, between those two games of the Champions Classic. So that'll be a, you know, it's not the final one. I don't even think it's the first one. I think it's the second one. That creates its own section of headlines. But really, the biggest story in the sport that day, and probably the day before leading into it, will be the kick of the college basketball season. And then really, it's just, you know, the first game for Mike Krzyzewski and what will be his final game of his career at the Garden against Kentucky. It'll be a huge spectacle, as it should be. And I'm eager to be there on hand with you and, you know, be able to witness that and chronicle it and see how it all kicks off. You know, we'll get more into this obviously as we get closer, but I just love the idea that it's those two schools playing after the season they had last year, and nothing's guaranteed. We'll see if Duke can be, you know, measurably better than the underwhelming and inconsistent group it was last year.
I think where I might have a blind spot here, you know, the reason I can't understand why people don't enjoy this as much as they seem to be, you know, in some cases bothered by it, is because I don't hate teams. Like, I'm a Mets fan, but I don't hate the Yankees.
You hate Marquette, right? You've always hated Marquette.
Yes, I've always hated Marquette. Okay. So glad Dawson Garcia found a home in the ACC.
Exactly. And we will get to Mr. Garcia, but I know what you're saying. You don't.
Some of it with the Yankees Mets stuff is I didn't grow up in New York, so I wasn't surrounded by Yankees fans telling me the Mets suck all the time, right? So I'd never experienced that. But like the Braves are in the playoffs right now, and like their best player is like from here. He went to high school 200 yards from my wife's store. You know, like and so I would love to see him win a World Series. And I tweeted something along those lines the other night. Somebody was like, as a Mets fan, you can't be rooting for the Braves. And I'm like, I don't hate the Braves, even though the Braves have been torturing the Mets basically my entire adult life. Like, I don't hate teams. So maybe that's it. Like, I can't understand why somebody would just hate Duke or hate Mike Krzyzewski, because I don't hate any team. I hate the only thing I hate some fan bases. That's true.
Some?
But
I think by the time we get to Valentine's Day, there's no love loss, and that sum is most. Because you've been ranking teams daily for the entire season, and they've all found you. So,
yeah, but I think I really do think it's just some. Okay. I do hate some fan bases, but I don't hate any teams. I don't hate any things, and so maybe that's why I can't understand the hatred, because I don't have hate in my heart,
except for some fan bases.
Except for some fan bases. I'll text you which ones. We'll rank them later. So not only is Coach K the story heading into this ACC season, he also is the man who has the best player and the team picked to finish first in the league. We're going to get into that next. But first, check this out. Are you looking for a new basketball shoe? If so, this is Gary Parrish here to tell you that the New Balance 2-Way V4 features the groundbreaking use of fuel cell technology with fresh foam, creating the ultimate combination of rebound and cushioning. Every step feels explosive and dynamic, and the upper construction features a lightweight textile that's supportive and breathable. So whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the 2-Way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the 2-Way at newbalance.com.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
So the official ACC preseason poll was released this week. Duke was picked to win the conference. The predicted order to finish, it is as follows. Number one, Duke. Duke picked to finish first, followed by Florida State at 2, North Carolina at 3, Virginia at 4, Virginia Tech at 5, Louisville at 6, Syracuse at 7, Notre Dame at 8, NC State at 9, Georgia Tech 10, Clemson at 11, Miami at 12, Wake Forest at 13, Pitt at 14, and Boston College at 15. It's interesting, the top 8 is the same as my top 8, just in a slightly different order. I have UNC 2nd and FSU 3rd. Instead of FSU 2nd and UNC 3rd. But I don't feel strongly about that. Like, I have North Carolina 15th in my top 25-1, Florida State 19th. So I have those teams pretty similar. And you can reasonably rank them in any order, I think. So before we get into the rest of the ACC, and I promise we're going to get into the rest of the ACC, let's do focus on Duke and its chances of winning the league title. As you know, they lost top two scorers from last season early to the NBA draft. Matthew Hurt, DJ Stewart. Do you realize neither of them got drafted and neither is on an NBA roster?
I knew both didn't get drafted. If you would ask me to guess if either was on a roster, I would actually guess that Hurt's on a roster, but I didn't know that he didn't make. I didn't know that, you know, as we started, the NBA would literally start its season last night. I didn't know that he's not on a roster.
He's like a final week cut by the Grizzlies. And so he's out of a job. Stewart's out of a job. They will make money playing basketball somewhere.
Yeah.
But is this true? They could be making more money with name, image, and likeness deals right now at Duke than they're actually probably making right now.
Oh, that'd be I don't know the details of their contracts. I assume they're on if they're even on.
I don't think they have contracts.
Yeah, they might have been on an Exhibit 9 before all this happened. Real quick on this, just as a reminder of how these things can go sometimes, and we could look up in 4 years and Matthew Hurt turns himself into just a nice role player, fourth guy off the bench who can give you a couple of threes a night on a borderline playoff team or something like that. I remember 3 years ago, us being in Vegas, seeing Matthew Hurt play in a gym. I want to say that was the first summer Penny was on the road. But like Penny, Duke, a lot of schools were chasing him. And at the time, it was this idea that Matthew Hurt was the kind of player, you know, highly rated five-star prospect, get to your school and really, you know, help push you toward like Final Four aspirations. To go from that, which just wasn't that long ago, and he was a nice player at Duke, to now you look up and you see him, it's just, you know, there are plenty of other guys whose stories don't go this way, and I'm not saying this is the end of Matthew Hurt's career. It's not, but sometimes we really do look up, and it's like, damn, I remember it feels like 3.5 months ago when this guy was, you know, as hot of a prospect for a certain period of time in the summer as you could ever imagine, and making the NBA is really, really hard, and sticking in the NBA is even harder, and, you know, when you brought up Hurt in particular, that kind of flashed in my mind.
Well, you mentioned he could someday. We look up in 4 years, and he's like the fourth guy off the bench for a playoff contender. More likely, we never hear from him again. I mean, there's a big difference from being a really great college prospect and a really great NBA prospect. If you can't move your feet a certain way, it gets really hard for you to get to that league. And so, listen, I'm not ruling anything out. If you can shoot, you got a chance, and he can obviously shoot, but you know, it being the opening week of the NBA season and him not being on a roster anywhere, and Stewart neither, it just speaks to, I'm not saying they made bad decisions, but, you know, they left early for the NBA draft and then didn't get drafted. That's not ideal. So regardless, Duke brings back three of the top five scorers. So scores 3, 4, and 5. It's Wendell Moore, Jeremy Roach, Mark Williams. So those are three guys that average somewhere between 7 and 10 points per game. And you know, Moore and Roach averaged, you know, 27 minutes per game. Mark Williams was at 15.2. And then they're adding to that a recruiting class that is ranked number 5 in the country, according to 24/7 Sports. But it's the only class with 3 five-star prospects. Like, Memphis has the number 1 class, but it's got 2 five-star prospects. Duke has 3. Paulo Banchero, who is ranked 2nd in the class. AJ Griffin, ranked 17th in the class. And then Trevor Kills, who is ranked 22nd in the class. So you've got 3 guys who were rotation players on what amounted to a bubble team last season back. And then you add 3 five-star freshmen, including the guy in Banchero, who I think is going to be the best freshman in college basketball, a first-team All-American, and the number 1 pick in the 2022 NBA draft. I'm not predicting Duke will win the national championship. If I can only take one team, I'll take Gonzaga. But I can absolutely see Duke competing for this national championship. And if you think Coach K's final season is a big story now, wait until he's going into the NCAA tournament, you know, theoretically with a 1 seed and a real chance to cut nets on that first night, Monday night in April. Then it becomes, you know, the biggest story in sports.
I think Duke's chances of being a 1 seed, I'm not saying that you're saying they will. I think the Blue Devils have a very small chance of being a 1 seed. And the reason why I say that, as we talk about the ACC on this pod, is the league will just be okay. It'll be good, not great. And I think the opportunities for a lot of quad 1 wins that will stack up to other teams that are going to be on that 1 line, let alone can Duke be much better than it was last year. I think that's a huge factor. The non-conference schedule for Duke, and we'll get more into this part of it when we have our Duke-specific pod in a couple of weeks here. Man, Coach K really did not schedule as aggressively as he perhaps should have if he wants to put his team in better position for a high NCAA tournament seed. And then if Duke's going to be in that position to compete for a national championship, make a Final Four, I'm going to tell you Banchero's got to be a top 5 player in the country, which is obviously possible. Wendell Moore's got to make a pretty big jump. He had 9.7 points, 4.8 boards last season. He was 48% from 2. Okay. 30% from 3. He's got to be better. He's got to make a jump. And I think that he probably will, but I think that's mandatory. And then Mark Williams, who you mentioned, should be one of the top 10 centers in America. He only played 36% of the minutes last year available to him, averaged 4.5 shots per game. I think he's going to crack our top 101 players list, and that's probably fair because I think when you look at Duke's roster, Banchero will clearly be the best player. I would say Wendell will be 2, and then AJ Griffin's got a knee injury. I don't think he's going to – we don't know if he'll for sure be available for the start of the season or whatever, but I don't think he's going to. But I would expect either Mark Williams or Trevor Keels will be in that, you know, number 3 spot for the Blue Devils overall. Ken, the guys that are returning, you mentioned them all, Moore, Williams, Jeremy Roach, an important guy in the backcourt there who averaged 8.7 points last season. Can they make the jump as well? I think Duke is the objective and fair preseason favorite. That's reflected in your rankings, in my rankings, in the ACC preseason poll, which was released on Tuesday. I think that is fair. I don't think it by any means sets up Duke as the definitive favorite. I don't think the space between Carolina and Florida State, which I think are the two closest teams to them, Virginia fans, and I'll get to the Hoos in a minute here. We have a compelling race at the top, but in my opinion with this league, it's compelling because the conference doesn't have a lot of gaps at the top and the teams that might be chasing in the 2, 3, 4, 5 spot.
The counter argument to Duke is the favorite to win the ACC title, I think, starts with Duke never wins the ACC title. Mm-hmm. They haven't won one since 2010. Do you realize Virginia has won at least a share of 5 ACC regular season titles since Duke last won one?
Mm-hmm. I do. Virginia, and Duke, yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Okay, then.
And Duke last won a standalone title in trivia time.
2015.
No, standalone regular season title. ACC.
Oh.
You're on a hot streak. It's hard to go 4 for 4.
It is hard to go 4 for 4. Duke last won a standalone ACC title in 2006.
My man is feeling it these days. He's red rolling.
Hot. Red hot.
Wow.
Red hot.
You are red hot. By the way, I'm going to give a shout out right now. Our attention was drawn to the fact that there was a user on Reddit who compiled all of last season's trivia times, broke it down statistically. You know, to the surprise of very few people, I wound up winning that. But we're not really chasing, you know, stats like that. But that's really cool and speaks to our awesome listenership. So I believe the user on Reddit was UMD Terps, and I told that person they would be getting a shout out on a near podcast. So you're getting that shout out right now. I will link that in the pod description. That was a really cool bonus. And since we organically, you know, brought another trivia time into this, I wanted to give them a shout. But yes, 2006 was the last standalone regular season championship in the ACC for Duke, and it's been more than a decade since they could even claim co-ownership there. You are right. The recent history doesn't suggest this to be possible. If I'm going to return yet another serve on you and make a case for Duke, it would just be what I said before. I just don't see a lot of heavy hitters. National championship contenders, if you want to whittle that pool down to 8 to 10 to 12 teams, I think Duke is the only team from the ACC that's in that. And if you really wanted to make a case against Duke, I think you could have one there too. And if you did that, you might be saying, in essence, the ACC doesn't have a true national championship contender.
Trivia time.
Okay.
As noted, Virginia has won at least a share of 5 of the past 8 regular season titles.
Mm-hmm.
5 years of the past 8 years, Virginia has been at least co-champion.
Right.
In that same 8-year span, only 2 other schools have won at least a share of an ACC title. Name those schools.
Virginia and Florida State.
Ding, ding, ding. Was that too easy?
That's just too easy. Yeah, just because they've been the only ones that have really been in the mix there, I think. I thought maybe UNC, but I lean toward Wahoos and Seminoles as of late.
Oh, no. What did you say? No. Only 2 other schools besides Virginia.
Oh, Florida State, UNC. Sorry. If I said Virginia.
That's right.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so we're rolling. We're hot.
So here's the point. Over the past 8 years, nobody has finished at the top of the ACC other than Virginia, Florida State, or North Carolina. So it should be unsurprising, I think, that the preseason poll lists the team that most people believe is going to be the best team in the ACC. And that's most humans and computers. KenPom, Torvik, they both have Duke, top of the ACC. Duke's 10th in both of those computers. So the top 4 in the ACC poll, it's Duke and the 3 schools that have won ACC titles in the past 8 years, Florida State, North Carolina, and Virginia. Florida State won an outright title in 2020. UNC won the outright in 2016 and 17, and then UNC shared it with UVA in 2019, and every other year is an outright Virginia regular season title. So I've got Virginia in my top 25 and 1. I also have them 4th in the ACC, but this is where you're really just trusting Tony Bennett. which I don't think is dumb, but you're really just torching Tony Bennett. He lost his top three scorers, Sam Hauser, Jay Huff, Trey Murphy, and he only brings back two players who averaged at least 8.6 minutes per game. They're preseason 45th at KenPom.
It's tough. That's one of my five biggest storylines. So here's what I got. Coach K retirement. Hubert at UNC. We'll get to that in a minute. Number three, what I just mentioned, the league just not being elite. Talent pool collectively lower than it's been. Only headlining freshman in this league is Paolo Banchero. No one else. Maybe we see like a Keels or a Griffin moving there, but not a lot of like high level freshman talent here. Number four,
Matthew Cleveland at Florida State.
Yeah. Don't.
He's a five star.
He's a five star. I don't know if he'll wind up being more than the fourth most important player on that roster.
To your point, how about this? We had to turn in our ACC ballots earlier in the week.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like top three for player of the year, coach of the year, freshman of the year. And on freshman of the year, I went Paolo. And then I was like, okay, now what do I do? So like, I hear what you're saying.
Here's what I had. I got a little spicy with it. Paolo, Benny Williams at Syracuse, because I think he'll wind up having the numbers. And then I actually went Trevor Keels third. That was my 1-2-3. I thought about Cleveland, but I just don't know if he'll have the numbers there. But exactly.
I think I went Banchero, Cleveland, Griffin, I think, something like that.
Storyline four, and then five is going to be Virginia. We can continue on that thread. You have Roy retire. Kay's going to retire. Who's next? Will we see Larrañaga retire at the end of the season? Jim Boeheim, is he going to continue to coach his kids and only his kids, or is he going to retire? Is he going to continue on? Mike Bray is nearing the end of his contract. I don't think he'll be retiring after the end of this year, although there is a thought that if Notre Dame really stinks, maybe they sever ties at the end of the season. I don't think Notre Dame's going to really stink. But the point is, another big storyline in the ACC this year is we're in the midst of some big changes. Not just the Hall of Fame legends, but some of the older established coaches that have been to Final Fours and done really good things in the tournament. We'll see on that. And then my fifth storyline is, I have it right here, will Virginia have its worst team in almost a decade? I think from a talent perspective, if Virginia fans are really honest with themselves and look at this year's roster and compare it to basically every other roster since, 2013 and on, I think this could be the least talented that Virginia has had. Now, if it was this roster and Tony Bennett wasn't coaching Virginia, then I would have had UVA easily outside my top 40. But I give Tony Bennett a whole hell of a lot of credit and the benefit of the doubt. I have UVA fourth. But that will be something to keep an eye on. Kihei Clark returns. He averaged 9.5 points and 4.5 assists last season. He's probably Virginia's best player. They do bring in Jaden Gardner, who for his career the past three seasons at ECU, that's two straight podcasts the East Carolina Pirates have been discussed on the Ion College Basketball Podcast, can almost guarantee that will not happen again for the next 10 years. Jaden Gardner averaged 18 points and 8.7 boards with the Pirates and a really respectable 23.1 PER, according to College Sports Reference. So he's going to get his, and then it's a matter of will it be Reese Beekman, who averaged, less than 5 points in 29 minutes a game last season. There's a lot to be discovered there with Virginia, but I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt. But to me, those are the five biggest storylines, because Virginia almost always is, but this year it's more, will this team again find a way? Are we going to look up, 3/4 of the way through the league season, GP, and see the Cavaliers like tied for first with two other teams, which won't stun us. But at the same time, I do think there's a real possibility that we could see the Cavs just wind up being 6 or 7 in the league.
There was a time when Bo Ryan was still coaching at Wisconsin when I just slotted Wisconsin into the preseason top 25-1 every year, because they were always one of the 26 best teams in the country, regardless of whether it looked like they were going to be or not. It didn't matter who they were enrolling, who they were bringing back. They were always good. And I think I even wrote about it. Like, I will always have Wisconsin in the preseason top 25-1 as long as Bo's the coach. And I did. I stood by that. And I feel the same way about Virginia. Now, I've got them 26th. I've got them but I was like, they're going to go in there because I trust Tony Bennett. And the reason you trust him is because Virginia's finished top 20 at KenPom in 7 of the past 8 seasons, top 10 in 5 of the past 8. But boy, when you look at the roster, I'll put it this way. You take this roster, put it in different uniforms with a different coach, you ain't even looking at it. And so if Virginia is good, it will be because of the guy on the sideline. But the guy on the sideline's great, so Virginia's probably got a chance to be good.
Let's talk Carolina here. Hubert Davis, that's him coaching Carolina, clearly the number two storyline heading into the ACC this season. Number six, by the way, is the fact that Leaky Black is back in a Tar Heel uniform. I think we all know that, so let's talk Leaky Black. But more importantly, I think the play of Armando Bacot, who averaged, 12-8 last season, 47% from two-point range. He only took 1 3. I think the plan is for him to step out and shoot a little bit more this season. We'll see if that winds up coming to be. And then the play of Caleb Love. Highly touted point guard coming in, averaged 10.5 points, 3.6 assists, 3.1 turnovers per game. Shot just 35% from two and 27% from three. We mentioned Dawson Garcia earlier. I think he's a really important second-year player. Spent a year at Marquette. Then his coach gets fired. He makes his way down to Chapel Hill. I think he will be one of the top three players on this roster by the end of the season. We both have Carolina as a tournament team, a top 25 team, but we have to see how Hubert Davis is going to do with this. What are your thoughts on the Heels? And just broadly speaking, GP, expectations. For me, a lot of this depends on the play of Caleb Love at the point. For you, as you've assembled your rankings throughout the offseason, as we get ready to make the turn to November, what should Carolina fans be, I think, reasonably expecting in the first campaign under Hubert?
I think they're going to be good. I've got them second in the ACC, 15th in the top 25 and one. I like the roster. Like, I look at Virginia's roster, I don't like it at all. I just like Tony. I don't like the roster. I like this roster. Bacot's good. Caleb Love should be good. RJ Davis, Kerwin Walton. I mean, that's four players there who average at least 20 minutes per game for a tournament team. We bring them all back. Add Dawson Garcia, Brady Manick, two impact transfers, and then you get Leaky Black back. Yeah. All jokes aside, he did take a little bit of a step back last season. Points, assists, rebounds, all slightly down, but down. Minutes down, three-point percentage down.
He might need to be, he might be on the edge here of the intro of the podcast. I got to be honest. We need to have standards here. He might need to step it up. I'm just saying.
Leaky needs a bounce back season. Hubert needs Leaky to have a bounce back season. And by bounce back, what I really mean is breakthrough. Actually, just bouncing back to where he was before last season, not that great. Yeah. So, like, let's have a breakthrough season, because last season it was 5.6 points, 4.9 rebounds, 2.4 assists in 27.6 minutes per game. So he plays a lot, just doesn't produce a lot. Although, he does things, he adds value on the court other than, those traditional statistics. But, needs to be obviously a little better, or we're just not going to have much opportunity to talk about him. And this is a place where we do like to sometimes talk about Leaky Black.
That's correct. Let's do a quick tour on the top half of the league. So Florida State, Louisville, Virginia Tech, Syracuse. Here's how I'd say, GP. Duke, UNC, FSU, UVA, Louisville, Virginia Tech. That's the group where I feel most comfortable if I'm projecting NCAA tournament teams. Those six from the ACC. I put Syracuse just a notch. I personally put them just a notch lower, and then almost on its own tier. And then I get to the rest of the league, which we can wrap the pod with in a minute. But FSU has Caleb Mills, who averaged 13 points in 39 career games, only played four games last season before bailing on Houston. They bring back Anthony Polite, who's a 10-5 guy who's going to need to make a jump. And then I think one of the big breakout players in the league this season will be Raekwon Evans. He only averaged 5 points in 19 minutes a game, but I think he is the breakout player in the conference who was there last season in the league and is going to return to the league this season. I do trust Leonard Hamilton here. So we both, again, we have UNC 2, FSU 3.
Don't forget about Cameron Fletcher.
That's true. That's true.
My man had an outburst on the Kentucky sideline last season.
Oh, I forgot about that.
Ranked 68th in the class of 2020 and then mad he's not playing a lot at Kentucky.
I know.
If you're ranked outside of the top 65 and you go to Kentucky, you probably ain't playing a lot. We should have talked about this before you even enroll.
That's how it is. But now he's going to try and find a career rediscovery under Leonard. So FSU there. I'll just real quick roll off Louisville and Virginia Tech. Give me your thoughts. Malik Williams, 4-5 for the Cards, elite defender. Might be one of the three best defenders in the conference by the end of the season. Redshirt sophomore forward, Jalen Withers. He's probably the most talented player on the roster. Averaged 10 and almost 8 last season. Wing Samuel Williamson averaged 9 and 8. I think he's going to get closer to getting to his ceiling. I like Louisville, but at the same time, man, they feel like an overall mystery to me, and I don't know if they have a guy to a closer, if you will. And then Virginia Tech, getting no shortage of love. We talked about them on a recent pod as well. Kaveh Aluma, kind of a clear-cut preseason top five guy in the league, 15-8 last season. Storm Murphy comes in as a 41% three-point shooter, played at Wofford under Mike Young, and then is going to transfer there this year. He averaged 18 points last season. And then Justin Mutz back as a 10-6 guy. Hokies are in a good spot again, and I think they've got to be pleased, and that fan base has to be pleased in this regard. Historically not a good program when Buzz Williams got there. Buzz did turn it around. And then you hire Mike Young, who was riding a long career at Wofford, but he had kind of hit his peak there. And to this point, the Virginia Tech has not dropped, and it doesn't look like it's going to drop this season. And that's evidenced by the fact that I think you and I both have the Hokies projected to make the NCAA tournament.
Sure. I've got Virginia Tech fifth in the ACC behind what is the consensus top four of Duke, Florida State, North Carolina, Virginia. But there will be – I think Virginia Tech can be as good as any of those teams other than Duke.
Yeah. They are like your dark horse, yes.
Yeah, like if you told me – because Virginia Tech, as we talked about on a recent podcast, unranked in the top eight preseason AP poll. But if you told me to – we did. We discussed this specifically. Team unranked in the preseason that could bounce into the top 10 – you know, within the first month, 6 weeks of the season, Virginia Tech would be my pick because I think they've got the players to do it. They got the coach to do it, and they got the schedule to do it. They get a bunch of bye games to start. Then they play Memphis, and Memphis will be favored in that game, but, you know, by what, 3-4 points? And if they beat Memphis, then I think they'd get, I think the way it goes, they get Xavier two nights later. You win that one, and if you're not already ranked, you are guaranteed to be ranked the Monday after Thanksgiving.
That's true. What else sticks out to you in this league? In that big old notepad of yours, 15 teams, man, by the way. This is the biggest conference in America. The ACC has 15 teams. That will no longer be true when the SEC gets to 16. But be it, you know, guys at the bottom, teams in the middle. When you look over this, what stands out in the ACC?
Well, you know, Josh Pastner did a wonderful job with Georgia Tech last season. But boy, they lose a lot. And I think they were picked 10th in the preseason ACC poll after finishing 4th in the league last season. So that's a pretty big drop. But Georgia Tech is not one of those places where you just reload. When you lose three guys and then you just replace them with three super talented guys who are ready to be impactful and you don't really miss much. Like Florida State, they just reload. North Carolina can reload. Duke can reload. It's hard to do that at these other schools. Most of the other schools in the league. So Georgia Tech probably going to is expected to take a pretty big step back, because when you lose the dudes that they lost off of last season's team, it is basically impossible to make up for it in one recruiting class.
Yeah, Michael DeVoe, 15-4-3 guy. Can he carry the group? That's the question. I don't know if that's going to happen. Do you agree with me, by the way, more importantly, that Josh Pastner is the closest parallel to Ted Lasso of any college basketball head coach?
I do love a locker room. Smells like potential. And am I getting notes of Axe body spray?
He's got to be, right? The dude bought a coronavirus pinata and had his team bond over smashing it and eating candy last season.
I wish I had the clip in front of me. That one, he walks in with it, and that one player is like, "Is that a COVID pinata?" I said, "Yes, it's a COVID pinata." it was like if you took Michael Scott and put him in that locker room and had him reenact that moment as Josh Pastner, it would fit perfectly into any episode of The Office.
Yes.
It made me laugh so much. And so I saw when you wrote at some point, college basketball's Ted Lasso is Josh Pastner. And knowing Josh for as long as I've known him, I think that...
That fits. If anyone's going to have a homemade belief sign over the locker room door, all of it, man. He just needs... See, the thing is, he doesn't have the stash. He's got the bushy old... He's got the sideburn look going on right now. But hey, good for him. And I say that earnestly and as a compliment. Like, he is the closest thing to Ted Lasso. Side note, Nate actually is Satan on that show. Elsewhere.
I hate Nate so much.
He's brutal. He's brutal.
He is awful. What an awful, awful person.
Bad. I know. My wife has a huge issue with the way they took that character. Anyway.
It did kind of come out of nowhere.
I feel like it did, actually. I that felt,
It felt abrupt.
Let's just be a sports writer for a moment and just quickly get off the soft ramp here. I did like season two, and spoilers, I guess, if you're not caught up, you know, fast forward 45 seconds. The Nate stuff did feel too contrived. That was the one part of the second season. I like season one more than season two, and I think most people did as well. You know, Rebecca and Sam dating felt weird. Is that ever happening in real life, really? And then the Nate stuff just, they set the table for it early. Like, I get that. Like, I think the scene from season one where he's, like, super harsh and insulting the players, and it's funny, but you can kind of see where, like, a lot of that stuff is pent up in him. But I don't know, man. That just felt, like, I didn't agree with, like, the way that he was going at Ted. And I just finished season two literally, like, 5 days ago, so still fresh in the mind. That's why I brought it up.
I liked season two. When I was watching, I was like, ooh, every writer out there is going to hate this.
Oh, yeah.
When the reporter gives up his source to Ted, that just would never happen. Nobody would ever do that.
It would never happen. But they made up for it in the finale when
like, still, it doesn't get past the fact that that would never happen.
That's not happening.
He got fired for it, as you would, but nobody would ever do that. Nobody would ever be like, hey, I had to write this story. It's very critical of you and exposes something you didn't want anybody to know about. And here's my source. Like, nobody would that ever in happen. A million years I do know. That. It does not happen like that.
Are you kidding me? That's, if you want a way to make sure you never get any more sources ever again, do that. Seriously, let alone have a job. Anyway, Ted Lasso review in the books. Real quick on the rest of the league. Buddy Boeheim, are you ready for Buddy Boeheim to maybe be the best player in the conference? Hey, Paolo's the front runner, don't get me wrong, but we could have a situation here where Buddy Boeheim's dropping, you know, 20 a night and getting cues to the NCAA tournament there.
I'm surprised he isn't getting more preseason, like, All-American attention. Like, I voted for him. I don't know where he ended up on our list. I'd have to look at that. He might not have ended up there at all. I'm not sure. But, like, I voted... He was unbelievable late last season.
He was very good.
Everybody focused on Johnny Juzang. Johnny Juzang went to the Final Four, so he, like, it is what it is. But Buddy was balling. Like, he was one of the best players in the country. And I don't know why some people act like that didn't happen. Like, he's going to be, I'm assuming he's going to be great.
I don't know. It might be some weird deal where, like, he's not getting quite the full credit because of his last name. I don't quite get it. I don't know. He'll be very good, but Syracuse needs Joe Girard to make a significant jump this season. I mentioned Benny Williams, good freshman. And then they got Cole Swider from Villanova in. Buddy Boeheim might actually be able to be even better if Swider can step in and be a pretty reliable shooter. What do you
Spoiler alert, I just looked. Buddy Boeheim, we do have him as a second-team All-American preseason.
Well, we'll talk about that on the episode tomorrow when we reveal all our preseason awards. As for the rest of the league, I want to touch on every team here real quick because it is an ACC preview. We are running a little long. I'll go reverse order here because the team I find most interesting we haven't talked about is Notre Dame, and I've got him just below Syracuse, but we'll go reverse order. BC, I think, will be the worst. It's got Earl Grant that just stepped in. Mekhi Ashton-Langford is back. There's just not a lot there. This is a tough job and a tough league, and I think it's going to be the last. I've got Wake in that penultimate spot. I think I could wind up being too low, but, like, Jake LaRavia is an Indiana State transfer, and it might be Wake's best player. Like, your thoughts on Virginia are kind of my thoughts on Wake in terms of roster when I look at it. Just not a lot. And Pitt is the same way. I got these three teams I have clogged together. I think this is the draw line above all the teams above this. Pitt, Wake, and BC, I think, are the clear-cut bottom three. To me, at least, their three best players transferred out. The best returning player is a guy who averaged 9 points last season, Ithiel Horton. I don't know. Like, I actually liked that Capel hire. Remember, Capel got the job after Hurley turned down Pitt and took UConn. I do think ultimately, I do think that Pitt will be in a good spot with Capel as the head coach there. But at this point, fair to say, before I get to the other team's GP, like, they are not at the stage that you and I thought they would be at, and probably the stage they should be at with him as coach. We would agree?
Yeah. I mean, they were picked 14th in the preseason ACC poll. I thought they'd be in a different place than that at this point. It doesn't mean that I don't think Jeff can or will get it turned around. I think he will. I like the hire too. I will say, you and I are both for the one-time transfer waiver. It makes building a program very difficult because you can't, like Buzz Williams, when he took over Virginia Tech, it was like, okay, I'm going to come in, start from nothing, and I'm going to build this thing. I'm going to enroll some under the radar guys, and we're going to develop them and coach them and build this into a thing. The reality of college basketball coaching right now, I think this is going to be a real problem for some of these guys, is that you can't really plan on building anything. You're putting together a new team often year to year. And so trying to come in and have a 3-year plan, that's like what some guys will at least privately say when they take a job. All right, like it's going to take us 3 years, but like this goes the way I think it's going to go. In year three, you know, we're going to be right where we want to be. Well, these days, you don't have any idea what your roster is going to look like in 3 years, regardless of what your roster looks like right now. You have no, there is a chance that the roster you have right now, 3 years from now, no players, not zero carryover. And so you can't build. You have to assemble year to year, and you have to do it at the same time Duke and Carolina and Kentucky are trying to do the same thing you're doing. It's just, all these guys make a lot of money, and so they're well compensated to do a hard job. But if you're in the bottom half of a league like this now, your job is really, really hard.
Yeah, very hard. And those are going to be the bottom three teams, I think. Moving up, Miami. They've got a really, really good lead guard named Isaiah Wong, averaged 17 and 5, 5 being the rebounds and not the assists there. He's a really good player, preseason first-team selection. Miami doesn't exactly get guys like that every single season in the ACC. So he's fun and worth watching. They've got Cameron McGusty. And how about this? I'd love any listener input if anyone knows. Charlie Moore is on this roster. Charlie Moore. Started his career at Cal.
Okay, let me see if I can go through it. Cal?
Yes.
Is this a trivia time?
No, we'll just, this is a freebie.
Okay, Cal, Kansas.
That's right.
How about, let's start first, and we can, initially committed to Josh Pastner at Memphis, all right?
Yes.
Initially committed to Josh Pastner at Memphis. Josh goes to Georgia Tech. Charlie Moore is back on the market. Cal. Then yeah. Kansas.
That's right.
Then DePaul.
That's right. And now?
And now?
Miami.
Miami. Yeah.
I want to know how many other players playing this season are on their fourth team. I'm not even mad. It's impressive. So, you know, just your Charlie Moore update. Like, he is the actual player where you get these, you know, like, Kihei Clark's been playing since he was with Ralph Sampson kind of deal. Like, all that typical stuff. Charlie Moore is actually that dude. He's been on all of these teams, although he hasn't been on teams that have found widespread success. But good on him, man. He is getting the most out of his college experience. Moving up.
Well, how about this? He committed to Josh Pastner at Memphis? And Josh ain't been at Memphis since 2016.
I know. He's going to be playing in 2022. It's wild. NC State has Manny Bates back. He's a great rim protector, efficient scorer, sophomore point guard Cam Hayes is good. They got a freshman, Terquavion. I don't
know how much better that would be if it was Amani Bates.
NC State's outlook with Amani Bates might be a little... But don't besmirch Manny Bates. He actually is he's a quality ACC player. He is. He'll have Cam Hayes.
But that's the, he walks around. He's like, yeah, I'm Manny Bates. Like, Amani Bates? No, I'm Manny Bates. Oh, okay. Nice to meet you, I guess. Tough. It's a tough life.
Terquavion Smith is a freshman for NC State. This is going to be good. Clemson, there's not a lot of there. They got to, replace some really productive scores. But I still think Clemson will find a way to be, 10th at worst in the ACC. Georgia Tech, we mentioned before. And then we'll wrap with Notre Dame. Senior point guard Prentice Hubb is back. He averaged 14.6 points and almost 6 dimes last season. But I'm not sure if he's the best player. It might be Nate Leshefsky, who shot 70% from 2, 43% from 3 last season, and is a power wing. That's how I would best describe him. And the fact that they get Yale transfer Paul Atkinson, who was last seen in the 2019-20 season because the Ivy League didn't have basketball last season, he averaged 17 points and 7 boards. And having him as kind of a yin to Leshefsky's yang, I think is pretty good. Notre Dame is a trendy team to break through and kind of return to form. That might wind up being their top 30 KenPom team. Mike Bray is overdue for a good season. I mentioned before, if they're bad, if they're, 500 or worse, then who knows? Maybe there's a change there. Maybe there isn't, because obviously he's beloved in that area and he's the winningest coach in the history of Fighting Irish men's hoops. But outside of the top and obvious teams, to me, the team with the most intrigue and potential is Notre Dame, who I would slot right behind Syracuse, who I have right behind that group of 6 we talked about before.
Notre Dame, 27th at KenPom, behind only Duke, Florida State. So earlier I said there's a consensus top four, but that's mostly a consensus top four in the ACC among humans. KenPom's got Notre Dame in the top three, so it is at least expect. There's some evidence to support the idea that maybe Mike Bray can actually have the bounce back season that that he needs, because he had that Notre Dame program operating consistently at a good level for a while, and it's fallen off a little bit, but this might be the season where it bounces back. Shouts to Devin Downey. Shouts to Chester, South Carolina. Shouts to Patrick Fields, legend. Shouts to Larnell. Thank you guys and girls for listening. Once again to the Island College Basketball Podcast, in the middle of the dumbest pandemic of my lifetime. Woo, it's getting dumber by the day. Do you see a football coach quit a $3 million, got fired from a $3 million a year job because he wouldn't take a shot like billions of people have already taken?
I thankful we don't have a coach in men's college basketball. That's at least to our knowledge. Maybe there's a rogue one out there, but I don't think so. But thankfully, there's not a coach out there doing the same thing, because this has been, it hasn't dominated college football coverage, but it's been obviously a very heavy story of interest. But imagine walking away for more than $3 million a year because you wouldn't take a shot that almost 3 billion people on the planet have taken.
I would let you give a Pfizer shot directly into my pupil for $3 million right now. But I would also take any shot other than a lethal injection. I would take any shot to keep my $3 million a year job. What are we doing?
Like you said, dumbest.
It's the dumbest pandemic ever. There's no getting around it. If you haven't subscribed yet, please go subscribe anywhere you subscribe to podcasts, including Apple Podcasts. We'd appreciate it while you're there. Rate it, review it, 5 stars, nice comments. We will talk to you again tomorrow. Till then, take care.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.